So part two of today's sermon, and there should be a slide coming on the screen in a moment. So part two, in this part, we celebrate the glory of marriage and the glory of celibacy, but we cannot do this unless we first recognize the glory of the body in Christian faith. St. Paul's writings are often quite hard to understand, are they not? And here he's clearly tackling situations in Corinth and writing a reply to a letter that he's received. So let's just see what we might take from the glory of the body that Paul writes about in 1 Corinthians 6. We can see for the Christian, there is no such thing as casual or inconsequential sex. In Christian understanding, there can be no separation of our bodies from our thoughts, emotions, from our whole being, from our soul, from God. And that is in stark contrast to the popular Stoic philosophy of St. Paul's time, and that still influences our culture today. Stoics had the twisted view that the body is the prison house for the soul. So some tried to deny the body's appetites and instincts, a life of asceticism. Other Stoics thought that what we do with our bodies is completely irrelevant to our souls, and so the body's appetites and instincts could be allowed free rein. The Christian knows that God made us as an integral whole, body, mind, and spirit. Our bodies have vital significance now and in eternity. At the resurrection, we are raised not as amorphous spirits, but in recognizable bodily form. St. Paul declares in 1 Corinthians, as we've just heard, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God?" You and I as Christians are God's temples where his presence lives, is to be seen and draw others to worship. The body, Paul says, is not meant for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. So Paul tells us to flee from sexual immorality, emphasizing that amongst all sins, sexual sin is especially injurious. Sexual sin particularly damages the image of God in our person. For St. Paul, then, going into 1 Corinthians chapter 7, there can be only two expressions of sexuality: marriage or celibacy. Let's first of all celebrate marriage. Three beautiful strands of marriage are identified in the Living in Love and Faith publication. First, mutuality, an utter sharing between the two. Marriage means the utter commitment of one person to the other in love, coming together as one. The Living in Love and Faith book has a beautiful description of this commitment, giving oneself over to the endless mystery of another person. Just dwell on that, those of you who are married, those who are in relationship, and just think about that as you look at the other person, your partner, your spouse, to the endless mystery of another person. A wonderful description that holds the lifetime of discovery that can go on in love in the mutuality of marriage. The second strand of marriage is fruitfulness. And of course, this is seen wonderfully in the joy of children and grandchildren. But fruitfulness is seen too in all marriages, regardless of whether or not procreation is possible. Fruitfulness in the couple's happiness and well-being, delight in one another, and fruitfulness in the joy of being together in marriage, spilling over to enrich friends, family, and neighbors. Whole communities benefit from the fruits of good marriage. A third strand of marriage that is an echo of God's is that marriage is an echo of God's covenant love for us, his church. In marriage, we are to love as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, Ephesians 5, 25. So this then is the essence of marriage: complete commitment to one another, mutuality, fruitfulness, and an echo of God's covenant love. For all of the vital importance, the glory of marriage, Paul still holds in 1 Corinthians 7 that for the Christian, celibacy may be better. He says more than once, "I wish you were all as I am," that is, single, celibate. St. Paul's views are clearly influenced by his conviction that the time is short, this world in its present form is passing away. He may have believed that the end of the world and Christ's return was imminent. Even so, Christians have discovered through two millennia that celibacy can be the most fulfilling life for the reasons that Paul says. See verses 32 to 35 of chapter 7. In essence, if you are married, you'll be much more concerned about worldly affairs than if you're not married. An unmarried person, Paul says, is free to be concerned about the Lord's affairs with the aim to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. In celibacy, all a person's desires and person can be directed to, devoted to God, and how to serve him. Those of you that can see the screen, there are two images of St. Teresa. On the left, at the entrance of the city walls of Avila, showing St. Teresa's devotion to God. And on the right, a much more expressive sculpture by Bernini of St. Teresa's ecstasy that has come from her devotion. Such richness possible in the celibate life freely chosen. But of course, how hard to work through if you've not freely chosen celibacy. St. Paul recognizes this. Better to marry than burn with passion, he writes. And passion surely being not just sexual, but all the emotional need to love and be loved with another person. The mutuality and fruitfulness of marriage. Celibacy, being unmarried, may be a great devotion of life for some Christians, but it's not one many of us would have considered choosing for our own lives. We know how hard it can be to be involuntarily single. A key role for the church must be to embrace those who are single, providing family together with mutuality and fruitfulness. Celibacy is hard. We surely should hesitate to say that singleness and celibacy must be the only options for some people. We surely should hesitate to say that singleness and celibacy must be the only options for some people. Which almost takes us to part three of today's sermon, same-sex relationships. First, though, to give us time to reflect on what we've considered so far, which is the celebration of love, the glory of the body, the glory of marriage, the glory of celibacy. To have some time to reflect on that, we're going to hear a setting of Shakespeare's Sonnet 29 by Rufus Wainwright. Beautiful, poignant words for this Valentine's Day of someone saying how desolate they feel, feeling as if they are a failure, nothing like as good or talented as other people, despising himself. But then in Shakespeare's words, I think on thee, thy sweet love remembered, such wealth brings that then I scorn to change my state with kings. The power of committed love to redeem us from our loneliness, affirm our soul, find comfort, peace and meaning. Sonnet 29 by Rufus Wainwright.